This is a Collider.com audio interview.
So, did you know this story? And did you know like the details and everything?
So.
Or if you did, what kind of research did you do?
Excuse me.
Kind of choked you up.
Yeah.
It's very moving to me.
You know, it was like one of those names that you've heard all your life, the Zodiac Killer, but you always were mistaking him for the Hillside Strangler, and you didn't really know where he fell. I didn't really know where he fell in that whole iconography. And then, you know, I read the script and, you know, started to... I really didn't realize who this guy was as far as the serial killers go.
Then the research after you got...
Then we started doing... Yeah, and then the research started, and it was... there's a mind-boggling amount of material around this case, and we were given, you know, basically sandbagged with the entire... I have the entire investigation sitting at home in a murder book, and I have... I probably have more information than any one particular police department has, because the one thing we were able to do was to get all of them to cooperate with making the movie, but none of them cooperated with catching the guy. Kind of. And, you know, it was just...
what does that tell you about justice in America?
Well, nothing that we didn't already probably know. I think the time period... They weren't set up for this in any way. The word serial killer hadn't been invented yet. Certainly there were serial killers, but they hadn't popped up into the culture the way this guy did. He's the first dude who sort of popped up into the minds of the culture and used the media and all of this to get himself off. I mean, I have to assume that's what he was doing with this. Make himself important in the world.
And hence the obsession with catching him, where people go beyond the pale almost and ruin their lives
to try to... Yeah, they hadn't been desensitized to the idea that there was a... You know, they began by calling him a mass murderer. They hadn't invented the term serial killer yet, and they hadn't been desensitized to someone who would just go out for the sake of killing and do this thing. So it became, you know, to them it was something so much more atrocious. To us, we're used to serial killers now. They weren't. So it really was like, we have to, this is a monster, we have to get this guy.
So why bother making a movie about it in 2007? Devil's Advocate.
I don't know.
There's something really compelling about watching it.
Yes, it was compelling to read it. It was, you know, compelling to work on it. I think it just makes for great, you know, with David Fincher, great storytelling and great drama, and also, it's about, you know what it is? It's about sort of there's the moral question of, do you go by the law, or do you go by hunch? You know, if we really want to make this a big question, I mean, even like vigilante, like going out into the world and trying to kill terrorists today, okay? There's the assumption, and there's a lot of motion going on behind that assumption, and then there's the law
and the science
and so Dave Toski told me, the second he saw Arthur Lee Allen walk into the room, in his heart, he said, that's our guy. That's what he said. But the cop in him said, there's not a single piece of evidence.
And there's a police officer, our investigator, retired, who's here today.
Yes.
Who's absolutely convinced
in his heart that
it wasn't Lee.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so all we really have in the end is the law. You know, that's the common, that's what makes... if you don't follow the law, if you go and you kill the guy, how do you know that you've got the right guy? Even if someone believes so deeply in their heart of hearts that that is the guy, if they don't follow the law, then, you know, we live in chaos. We live in a world of chaos.
But as when you a found film, out. One last thought, sorry. Well, as sorry. A film, it's sex without the orgasm, though, because there's no...
The orgasm is the mystery. That is the gestalt of the film. That is the mystery. That is the finality of the film. I mean, that's what people walk away from the film in. You know, that's what they're feeling. That's where their terror comes from. That's where their imaginations blossom. It's in the mystery that is the finality of the film. That's what they're responding to.
When you found out that your character evidently was a prototype for Dirty Harry or Michael Douglas in the Streets of San Francisco or a whole bunch of other things, did anybody say that to you when you first got the character, so you had to block those performances out of your mind, or did that even faze you?
I'm the type of actor, I want to go and see the real deal. And, you know, so I first thing I said is, how do I get in touch with Dave Toschi? You know, how do I go up and meet him? I want to spend time with him. I want to spend a few days with him.
Was he cooperative?
Totally. I mean, the first thing he said to me is, Mark, why are you here? Why do you want to talk to me? You know, and he talks just like that. Or I hope he talks just like that. And so I got to spend time with him, and all of a sudden, all that other stuff just fades away. You know, you're sitting there with the real McCoy. He did tell me that he was the inspiration for Bullet.
Steve McQueen. Because he's kind of proud of that, or
yeah, he's got a picture of him and Steve McQueen together. You know,
Well, here's another question that's sort of big, but not as big as that.
Right.
Here's a movie that's long,
yes,
and it's very meticulous, tedious, a little tedious along the way,
yeah,
but yet, for me at least, intriguing all the way through.
Good.
What's the key, in your mind, for making that happen?
Specificity. Going to real life and really doing the work of, like, the background work and, like, the specifics of what happened. Real life is infinitely more interesting than we can try to imagine, you know? And it's that old adage, God is in the details, you know? It's like Fincher is just painstakingly went and he created that world, that time, which we all have touched or know, you know? We remember it. It's has almost a sentimental value to most of us. He really did his work to recreate the time, recreate kind of the feeling, and then he really was true to the investigation. You know, there's not one sort of dramatic departure for the sake of dramatization in the movie, you know, which is pretty remarkable, you know, I think, for a movie, for something that spans such a long period of time. And it was a real act of trust on his part to do that, you know.
Was there one thing about the person or your research or something that you really wanted to get in and like even just get into the mindset or something about that?
Dave Toschi's relationship to his family was always, he just adored his family and his three daughters. And that wasn't really in the script as much. And it was something that I thought was important. Just so we feel the other side of this guy, you know, is, I just think it gives him another dimension that wasn't exactly in there. So that was worked into it. I was always like trying to bring them in. I even added a line at one point where I was like, "Shh, my daughters are upstairs," you know, and that wasn't in there. The guy was a beautiful family man too, you know. So.
And his family stayed intact, unlike the.
Yes, he was able. They handled it incredibly gracefully. It still is that one thing that destroys your life, kind of. It really did take its toll on him. And he's gone on, and he's not bitter, and he's not, but it is something in him that
does
hurt.
It help him that the guy really, he thinks that Lee did it and Lee's dead? Does that help him a little bit then?
I think it helps him that there's no more murder, that
right.
The murders have seemed to stop, although, you know, Graysmith presupposes that that he just morphed into he just became quiet about it. And that's what Zodiac said he was going to do, was he was going to start doing it in a way that nobody knew who was doing it. You know, it's an open wound, I think, for all these guys who put so much time and energy into it that they never caught him, you know.
Can you talk about working with David Fincher?
Sure.
You know, Robert Downey Jr. was doing press a couple months ago, and he sort of like rolled his eyes about how long the shoot was taking, and he was a little getting annoyed by that. Can you talk about the process, and was it enjoyable? Or?
Well, I mean, more David departs on this movie than he does on some of his other movies is he really wanted to do a character drama where he could take two people or three people and let them speak and do long dialogue scenes without having to cut away or cut in the close-ups and stuff. And when you do that, and you're working with someone like David Fincher, who I call a full-frame director, the actors only happen to be about 30% of a frame, and you have five extras, that car going by, how far the lamp's hanging down, the branch in the tree, like all these things are in his... He sees all of them, and he's aware of them, and they're all part... You know, this Fincher knows this is a stab at eternity, you know. And you know, like, he wants it to go down, you know, the best they can, you know. So, yes, when you want to do a long dialogue scene and you want to do it in one take, you're going to shoot it 20 times. You got to get that extra in the right place at the right time. And the camera has to be, I mean, there's so many elements at play. And that's really that was sort of what he was hanging the look and the feel of the movie on from very early on. And yeah, but man, I come from the theater, man. You do 500 performances, you know. I mean, like, so to me, you like, it's tough. And Dave's he expects the best from people. He wants you to show up and be ready to work, and like he wants the best from people. He uses the best people and he expects the best from them. And so it's tough. It could be nerve-wracking at times, but man, I'm game for that journey, you know. I dug it, you know. I it gives you another chance to get it right, you know. So but it is nerve-wracking.
Did Totski really walk out of Dirty Harry like he does in the movie?
Yeah.
And what was his reason?
He couldn't take it.
It was wrong, or it was just...
It was so simplified. It was so simple. He was in the middle of one of the biggest cases in the United States at the time, and they were having no movement on it. And he was, you know, he knew, or they had a mountain of evidence against... and they still couldn't... It took him 9 months to get a search warrant to toss the guy's trailer. So it was, he's just crawling out of his skin, and the guy just walks up and he's like, I don't care, if you're gonna go walk free, I'm gonna blow your brains out. And then the audience, yeah, all right, you know. Yeah, we all did it, right? And he you know, I think that was frustrating for him. You know, it was, yeah. He would like to do that probably.
Has he seen Zodiac?
He hasn't seen it yet.
Are you a little antsy about it? Does that mean a lot to you?
Yeah, I the first thing I said to him was like, "Listen, why are you here?" I was like, "I'm here to honor you, man. I'm here to like to be as honest as I can about playing you, you know." And so, you know, at first, that family doesn't want to reopen this. His wife was adamant that we couldn't use her name in the movie. They don't want... It's a painful time for them, and they have no idea what Hollywood intends to do with it, you know? So I made sure he got the script before I went to see him, and I asked him if there was anything in there that was prickly or, you know, didn't feel comfortable with, and he said no, he felt good about it. And then, you know, slowly but surely, he started to reveal himself to me. And I hope... You know, I feel like it was it's a fair portrayal of who Dave Totski was. Is the little time that I had to do it in, you know,
including the animal crackers.
That's Dave Totski. That's classic Totski. The Tipperillos, the, you know, the animal crackers is, you know, I hope the way he talks and
bow tie too. That was part of his check.
Dave Totski. Yeah. Totally Dave Totski.
The relationship between him and his partner Anthony, you know, they're like Mutt and Jeff. They don't seem to be. They're so different. The real people were that different from
me? Totally different. Dave Totski was like an anomaly. He was he was, they were all dressed like G-Men, you know, they had the little G-Men jackets and the ties and the G-Men glass. I mean, that was the prototype cop at that point. And then you have this very flamboyant dude who's wears bow ties and bright clothes and is very, you know, laissez-faire. And so they had an interesting relationship, the two of them, you know. It was contentious at times.
How close is the final film to the script that was originally presented to you?
It's pretty close. I know there's a couple scenes cut out. I mean, there's time, you know, it was long. It was longer than it is now. And so there was some stuff that was cut out that probably didn't serve the movie totally, but it's pretty close.
What are you doing now?
I just wrapped a movie called Reservation Road that Terry George directed with Joaquin Phoenix. And now I'm just hanging out with my kids.
Who do you play in that?
It's about a hit and run. Two fathers, and I play a guy who hits his son and kills him and runs.
Real 5 minutes.
Light, jaunty, romantic comedy.
Now something like that, where is an indie or.
Yeah, it's focus film, so it's a mini indie.
Something like that. Studio. What's shooting them going to a Fincher? I mean, the complete opposite.
Totally. Yeah. Fun. Yeah. I like that, yeah. Yeah, I get bored, you know, so I like to keep. Well, let's try this, you know.
Did you meet any of the other, did you meet Robert Graysmith or anyone else?
I spent a lot of time with Robert Graysmith. We spent a lot of time with Robert Graysmith. Then I was, you know, people were coming, I met Narlo. You know, people were coming around as we were shooting, you know. People who weren't in the movie were coming around. I met, the guy at Berryessa who stabbed, who lived, Brian, I met him and his kids came along. I mean, it was a lot of people who were attached and part of this time. And Fincher and Brad Fisher really were doing their best to, get all of their stories and really, make it an open place for them to come and, you know.
Has the experience sort of whetted your appetite in any kind of dark way for more contemporary murder mysteries? And in other words, you open the paper and go, holy fuck, it happened again. It's like, and then get immersed in those cases?
I'm too sensitive to it. I start to, it's too scary to me, you know, it's just too, you know, like the astronaut who went across in her diaper across the United States.
That,
yeah. I mean, I don't know.
That's a cartoon.
It's hilarious. I mean, it's weird. It's so weird.
What's something about David Fincher that is not in the press notes that you can tell us?
I haven't read the press notes. So, I was scared to work with Fincher, kind of. I'd heard that he was an intense guy, and sometimes he yelled at people, you know. And so I was kind of, I didn't know what to expect, but I was really surprised by kind of how gentle and easygoing a guy he is. And oddly enough, I was having a conversation with him, and he said to me something about having faith, you know, about where the world was going and everything. And it just struck me as odd from him in a weird way, because he has such dark leanings. But he's really an enormously kind of optimistic and positive guy. What else about it? Maybe what are they? What, maybe give me some things I could refute.
I don't want to be quoted on saying anything about.
He's you know, he's upset. You know, the film is like this kind of eating itself, because he became obsessed with the case too. I mean, I don't know if anyone ever told you about this. When Arthur Lee Allen died, and they went to his house and they gathered all the evidence. There was a tape sitting in a cassette player, and it was a tape of a child being spanked by Arthur Lee Allen. And it is the most gruesome, and you want to kill the guy. I mean, you do want to Dirty Harry his ass, kind of, you know. But Fincher, he knew about, he was so obsessed that he knew about this tape, you know, he'd heard it. His obsession with the movie became the movie itself, kind of, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't know if that's, he's very, very meticulous. I don't know if that's in the press notes.
Is that what sets apart from the other directors you've worked with, or is there anything else specifically?
Some of the, they all have, you know, Michael Mann's a little bit the same way, in a weird way. Also a full frame director, you know, likes to do lots of takes, very much immersed in the world that he's creating, knows all the minute detail, much more than any of the actors know. He knows more about your character than you do, mostly.
Do you find that to be helpful? Or sometimes
if someone could, if they can convey it in a way that you can understand, it's very helpful. Yeah. If it's too much detail, and you know, it gets. I mean, you just kind of shut down to it after a while.
Mann's superb at breaking down his movie, deconstructing them, even for
you guys.
For us. There's no Fincher today.
No.
And yet it's...
You know what Fincher's idea of the perfect press junket is? Is everyone, give us your questions. Give us all your questions. Give us 1,000 questions. Whatever they're doubled, we'll just ask them once. Or tripled, we'll just ask them once. And we'll sit down in front of a camera and with mics and everything, and we'll put together the entire thing, and you guys don't have to come here.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah. I mean, that's his... You know, I think ultimately he really believes the proof is in the pudding, you know, and all the talking around it doesn't, you know, only clouds the issue, maybe.
Do you believe that? Because you talked about your movies rather well. You talked about what you do rather
well. I like to talk.
We're going to have to wrap this up. Anyway, thanks. Do you think it was Arthur Lee Allen?
I keep flopping back and forth on it. I know that they found, you know, then they did this genetic test, but we don't know that it was his saliva on the back of the stamp. I have seen this guy. He was a bad, bad dude. Mm-hmm. He was a sociopath.
He was guilty of something.
Yes. He also wanted people to believe that he was Zodiac. Is it beyond a shadow of a doubt? I that's where I'm stuck. Mm-hmm. Because there are those few little things that don't quite jive, you know?
But your character, but Dave thinks it's...
Yeah, and I want to believe it's him, too. I really do want to think it was him.